This is the start of tape 7. Comments being taken from scrapbook 4. Starting on page 114. I'm continuing my comments about race relations where I left off on tape 6, side B. I was telling about the only black boy at my grade school, Miles Standish. He was probably not enrolled more than 2 or 3 months, and he lived over on Cedar Avenue and about 37th Street on the west side of Cedar Avenue. I noticed when we went out for recess to play in the playground at school, he was playing by himself. Nobody else would play with him. I thought that wasn't right, and even at that young age, I went down to the site of the playground where he was playing and started to play with him. And I did this during his entire 2 or 3 months he was in the school. His name was Leroy Nelson, as I recall it. I received comments and heat from fellow students, white students, who were telling me, why are you playing with him? And I told them, well, he's playing alone, and I don't think he should be playing alone. I want to play with him. And no matter what the comments were, I continued to play with him during the entire time that he was going to school at Miles Standish. I never did hear what happened to him, where he moved to, what school he went to later, and I never came across his name or he personally up until the present time. During my tenure as chief in Minneapolis, I received assistance, cooperation, and help from the black leadership, the leaders that I respected and helped me were Cecil Newman, who ran a black newspaper, Shelton Granger, who was head of the Urban League and was the first black to come to our police recruit training school when I started it in the Minneapolis Police Department and talk about race relations. Harry Davis, who worked around the Phyllis Wheatley House, was very active in Golden Glove boxing and later on was a prominent leader in the black community and did run for mayor at one time. Another black who assisted me was Matt Little. He was very active in the NAACP and president of it at several different times and even up into recent years and months I've read about him being still active. Another leader was Curtis Chivers, who assisted and furnished me with his viewpoints on any situation, complaint, and so forth that was being discussed at various times when I was chief. Another prominent supporter was Richard Parker, who apparently led a fairly conservative group in the black community and supported the police department very much. He thought that the some of the radical leaders, such as Sill and Gwen Davis of the Way, Spike Moss of the Way, active up until the present time, and Joe Buckhalton, another active leader with the Way, and Richard Parker apparently was against those leaders and the Way as an organization. He believed it was nothing but a scam and a money-making proposition. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I have seen him in recent years. He has moved out of Minneapolis and lives up in Anoka County someplace, and I see him over at Theodore Worth Golf Course, where he's around the putting green practicing and playing. When I go over there to play in a golf league that I'm active in at the present time. These previously mentioned people were helpful to me with information and their opinions on what should be done on various type of racial matters, complaints of discrimination, brutality complaints against the police department, and other type incidents. They would advise me, and I could call on them on various occasions if I needed their opinion, and I respected their opinion, though I made my own decision after talking to them. On pages 115, one 18 and 119 are and following pages are comments of about and articles about the residency rule. This was went to court, and on page 121, the city police residency rule was upheld in court, and but Officer Lloyd or Sergeant Lloyd Berg will probably appeal the ruling by the court. So this will probably continue for a considerable period of time before a decision is finalized. 116, 117, 118. There are articles concerning prostitution in Minneapolis. When I became chief, there was a problem. There was prostitutes at different locations in the city, on Plymouth Avenue, sometimes in downtown Minneapolis. And I made the decision to put as much pressure on this nuisance and this problem as I could. And I can just continually on the back of the head of the moral squad and his men requesting more arrests and to put all the pressure possible on this type of thing. When I left the Minneapolis department 4 years later, there were no prostitutes on the streets. There was one or two bars on Hennepin Avenue where there was a few girls hanging around, and if there was any call girl operations, we weren't aware of them. They're very difficult to apprehend and to make arrests, because they operate in such a way that it's very difficult to get evidence on them. We continue to put pressure constantly during my four-year period in the as chief in the Minneapolis Police Department, and my own opinion was that we did a pretty good job and reduced the problem substantially during my tenure as chief. In scrapbook pages, scrapbook 4, continuing from page 114 into 115, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23 are continuing articles about prostitution, about the residency rule, and the lawsuit started by Officer Berg, Lloyd Berg, fighting the residency rule. And this, the residency rule continued on for a considerable period of time. And I was sued, I know, for a large sum of money, I believe over $1 million. And eventually the suit wound up where the officers were forbidden to live outside the city. And this continued on for a while, and then later on the rule was changed and officers could move outside of the city. This was in later years. And now, as of the year 1995, there is agitation now, and the city council passed a ordinance where all new city employees will have to reside in the city of Minneapolis in order to be hired. So what goes around comes around, I guess, and it's still a controversial matter. On page 119, scrapbook 4, there's an article about Father Dorn, veteran city pastor, died. He was my pastor at St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church when we moved up in this area, and continued on until his death. He was a strict, very personable type man. And one of my favorite memories of him is each year he had what he called the ghost picnic. Apparently at one time he held a picnic at the church where they had rides and games and sold various types of merchandise in order to raise money for the church. And apparently he was sued at one time by somebody who got injured on the grounds on one of the rides or something like that. So he discontinued the big fundraising thing, and instead, what he'd do, he would
asked the Parisianers to bring and give what they normally would have spent in a carnival or picnic that he had held previously. And what he would do, he'd put on a white cassock and act the part of the ghost walking up and down the aisles of the church. And all the Parisianers made a donation as to the amount they ordinarily would have spent at the fundraising activity. A different approach, and he got a lot of laughs with it each year, and he raised a lot of money too. It's one of my favorite memories of him. As you continue to page through the scrapbook, four pages, 126, 127, 128, 29, 30, and 31, up through page 135, concerns a lot about politics. City election was coming up, and Arnett Leslie, a councilman, was running against Mayor Naflin, the mayor who appointed me, and there were a lot of articles written about various subjects, trying to get the department into controversy, and about from various sources about prostitution and about getting more coverage in the north side, and different subjects like that that the aldermen were interested in. And also there was articles about crime statistics. I made the habit as chief to furnish statistics to the news media whenever they came out, and to make comments and compare them with the previous months, the previous year, and so forth, so that the citizens would have some idea whether my administration was making any progress, and whether the department was being run in a responsible, professional manner and trying to do our job to the best of our abilities. It also had an element of PR in it, because we wanted to put forward our best foot and to make ourselves look as good as possible without prevaricating or laying it on too thick. So that's the reason some of these articles are on these pages. There were pictures also where we were presented with an American flag by a Legion post, and also a picture showing our complaint room, radio car control map, and with a showing a dispatcher at work, and me standing by the radio console where we dispatched all the police cars for the city of Minneapolis and for the Minneapolis Police Department from this room. We usually had we had some permanent employees and police personnel in the complaint room or in dispatching. A lieutenant was in charge, and we had some permanent dispatchers also, usually people who had been injured on duty and were or had some illnesses where they were required to have light duty. And we took care of that problem by putting them in as dispatchers. And they made excellent dispatchers because they all had experience out on the street and knew what was going on out there when the calls came in. On page 127, 137, 138, and 139 are pictures of myself and Tony Oliva. He came down to the office, and there was a a campaign put on by the Automobile Association about safe type walking for kids and other citizens of Minneapolis, and Tony lent his good name and very attractive appearance to the department and to the Automobile Association to promote safe walking in the state and the city. On page 140, there is, and 141, there is a couple articles about Deputy Inspector Robert Finn and Detective Mike Blanche going to a Birch Society meeting and giving a talk and answering questions after their talk. Mayor Nafflin was very perturbed about them going to the meeting to begin with, and mainly because he was under the impression that it was a secret society and that police officers shouldn't be speaking to them. What they actually said during their talks, I agree with 100% about confessions and interrogation of criminals and the sentencing for hardened, repetitive-type criminals and so forth. I agreed with all they said. Of course, I didn't tell Mayor Nafflin this, but Deputy Inspector Finn was one of our top-notch police officers. He was a homicide detective for many years and a broad experience, and put his life on the line several times that I was aware of, that and for which he was commended. And I thought Mayor Nafflin's reaction was a little bit too much for the small meeting that it was, and the fact that they were some of our best officers, and their answers that he was concerned about came in response to questions from the audience after the talks were given. In scrapbook 4, page 143, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, and 52 are pictures of the dedication of the Northside Station up at 2400 West Broadway, North Minneapolis. The station was dedicated, and there were a number of politicians, police officers present, and several speeches were given. There were aldermen and clergy, police department personnel, and citizens present at the dedication. On page 152, there is a program for a retirement dinner where Joseph J. O'Hare, who was a prominent labor leader and head of the bakery drivers union, was retiring. And among the guests was James R. Hoffa, I was introduced to him at this banquet prior to the meal, and when I was introduced, he made the remark, "All I need is another police chief now," because he was in the some of his upheavals in the labor Teamsters problems down in Washington, D.C. and all over the country. And it was kind of interesting, the remark that he made when he met me. On page 153, 154, and 155, are articles and editorials about shifts in police personnel and some changes I made in the Detective Bureau in order to get more efficiency. This caused a lot of talk in the department, and but it was needed because there wasn't any supervision of detectives throughout the night, from midnight till 8 in the morning, and this was needed in order to have some continuity. Also, some other articles about different ordinances that we needed and increases in personnel that I was seeking. I was doing this constantly during my whole career. Because it was needed, and sorely needed. On page 157 and 158, there's a story about Dennis Linehan. He had committed murder and He escaped and committed another murder in Michigan while he was on the run. And he served a long period of time. And at this time in the year 1995, he was in the news prominently as he was seeking to be released from the St. Peter Institution for the Criminally Insane, where he'd been confined for many years. Just recently, he was turned down by the courts in this matter, and he is awaiting return. On side A, I was commenting about Dennis Linehan. Just recently, he was turned down by the courts, and he's now awaiting return to St. Peter Institution or Hospital for the Insane to have his confinement continued indefinitely. Starting on page 159, 160, 161, 162, 163, and 164, and 165. These pages have numerous articles about meetings on the north side about prostitution and our reactions to them. We continue to keep the heat on prostitution in Minneapolis, trying to clean up the problem, and we keep getting protests and calls for meetings to discuss the problem, and these articles concern all that type of thing. Also, something about Northside problems, mainly from Alderman Greenstein. Teenagers congregating in groups on the corners and that type of thing. It's very difficult to be a police chief and get this constant comments and requests for meetings, and I attended every one I could and tried to show them we were doing the job, but apparently some of them at least didn't believe we were doing so. On pages 169, 170, 171, and continuing on page 175, 176, and 177, going into page 178, 179, the comment continued and articles continued on racial complaints and complaints against police and how to handle them. Some of the human relations, race relations, organizations couldn't agree among themselves as to what should be done, how police complaints against police should be handled, and so it was a very stressful kind of a situation for a police chief, and all the guy could do was give it his best shot and go right down the middle. When police were wrong, which they were on a few occasions, give disciplinary action, take disciplinary action, which I did on the occasion where the officer was wrong. On page 174 was my ticket stub for a World Series game involving the Minnesota Twins and the National League team, the Los Angeles Dodgers, at Metropolitan Stadium. I was really surprised as soon as the Twins, the Minnesota Twins, got into the World Series, how many phone calls and letters I received from police contacts in other cities who were calling and writing and hoping that I would be able to help them get World Series tickets. Of course, I couldn't and didn't get any for anyone. I was lucky to be able to get in myself. And it was a surprise to me how many of them expected that I would be able to do that and be able to get them tickets. And nobody mentioned paying for them either, so they apparently figured I had more power, or they operated their departments in a different manner than I did in their cities. On page 177 and 178 and 179, there is a story about a city Negro woman tells of harassment during which incident a window was broken apparently, and that kind of thing. And on page 179, this incident, like many others, was found to be unfounded, that a 12-year-old boy had fired an air rifle near the duplex where the complainant lived, and very likely this was the cause of a window being broken. Anyway, the complaint was unfounded. page 180, there are a couple articles about police union donation is criticized. I suspended a police officer for using disparaging language about Jews and Negroes, and suspended the officer for a number of days. And the Minneapolis Police Federation voted to give the suspended officer $100 to help him with help him out, and of course this brought about some discussion in the newspapers and various articles about the chief being supported, and that they thought the Federation supposedly donating the money for hardship reasons was off base, as long as he was suspended by an action of the chief. On page 184, there is a copy of the Master Detective magazine for December of 1965, in which I was given the award for being National Police Officer of the Month by the magazine. On page 185, there is a interesting little story about one of my favorite dishes, Arabian casserole, and the recipe is given there, and there's a comment or two about it, and this is a recipe that I made one time to surprise my wife and kids when they were away for the afternoon and I was home alone. And one interesting further thing that happened with this, that my wife received a call from some lady who didn't identify herself, who berated her calling the dish Arabian casserole because Muslims didn't eat pork, and this involved 6 pork chops in the recipe. And my wife was surprised about it, and so was I, but it's just the title of the dish, and we got it out of a cookbook, so we had nothing to do with calling it Arabian casserole. On page 190, there is a Minneapolis Police Bulletin for Friday, December 24th, 1965. And this contains a Christmas greeting from Mayor Arthur Neff and from myself to all the members of the department. I also made it a habit, and did while I was chief, send a Christmas card to each police employee on the department and working for the police department. And I did this for all the years that I was chief. I think it was only proper for the head of the department to do this. And it was quite a job addressing all those cards and stamping the envelopes and all that sort of thing. And the wife and I did this at home. On page 191, there are some articles about a talk I gave at the KC meeting. And during this meeting, I was presented with a plaque, and was it was a nice honor. on page 192, there are some articles about our first indication of some racial troubles in Minneapolis, during which some youths almost rioted, or newspapers called it a near riot at a theater that broke out in the Vogue Theater at 31 West Lake, and then went out into the street afterwards. And this was the first indication of near violence or possible violence concerning the race issue in Minneapolis. There would be more in future years on this subject. I am starting scrapbook 5 now with my comments, and it's dated December 23rd, 1965 to July 18th, 1967. And it's also notebook 43, page 22, continuing through that notebook and into and concluding notebook 44. Page 1, scrapbook 5, it's a couple brief articles about a law officer's retreat, which is held at King's House out of Buffalo, Minnesota. About 60 Minneapolis and Hennepin County law enforcement officers attended. A lot of times I felt that some of the men attended for kind of political reasons, or to stay in good standing with me as chief of police. But I felt there was a lot of good accomplished, and it was a very excellent retreat and meeting. And if some officers change their actions or lifestyles or what have you, it was a good thing, and I felt that we should continue to have them, and I did as long as I was chief. You never know how much good would come from such a retreat. On pages 2 and 3, there's a story about a young policeman killing a robbery suspect. In the articles concerning this, the grand jury ruled that the shooting of the suspect was justified, and I believed it was also. The officer involved, William J. Mavity, continued his career in law enforcement and later worked for the Crime Commission in St. Paul, and became an attorney, and is in practice in this area at the present time. Or there are some articles about crime increases in the city, and periodically, whenever they came out, I would issue comments and try to decipher what was going on and why the increase and that sort of thing. And each time the media would pick up these stories, of course, I felt that it was a good thing to keep reporting to the citizens of the city on crime and what I thought were the reasons for the increase or decrease, or however the situation was portrayed in the media. On page 6 are a couple articles about an arrest made for obscenity concerning a painting in a gallery. The arrest was made on complaint of a citizen, and the painting was taken in
as evidence to be shown at the trial. The other stories are on page 8 and 9 in the scrapbook, telling about the trial. And the picture was returned, or painting was returned to the gallery eventually, and there was a lot of questions raised about the arrest and the charge. The Civil Liberties Union got into it and made their position on it known. It was my experience as chief that the Civil Liberties Union was constantly putting in their 2 cents worth on almost every arrest, or not every arrest, but in many of the arrests made. And I felt that they probably had to take this position in order to keep the contributions to their organization coming in and showing that they were trying to do a good job. But it seemed that they nitpicked quite a bit, though their excuse was always that it was a violation of the U.S. Constitution in whatever situation came up. Eventually, one of the executive directors of the Civil Liberties Union's sister was raped, and in this situation he came in and acted just like any other citizen, complaining very much about police tactics and what was happening with the case. On page 7 there's an article about Don Dwyer and his family, and also one where he was picked to attend the FBI Academy. It was my policy when I was chief to send everybody possible to various training schools and FBI Academy and the Southern Police Institute and other schools to give them additional training and education so that they could be more effective in their duties in the police department, and to improve the quality of law enforcement in any way possible. On pages 8 and 10 and 11 are articles and a copy of a brochure that was put out by the police department and announced by Mayor Nathlin and Morris Strothman, chairman of the Mayor's Commission on Human Relations. The brochure was about how to complain about police problems, that when a citizen wanted to complain about an individual police officer, and it lists some various things to include in your complaint, and telling about the incident or whatever happened. This was brochure to help police community relations in the city at the beginning of a very difficult and tumultuous time that was coming up in the future, as far as race relations, Vietnam protests, and what have you. It was a very difficult time to be a policeman, and a police chief for that matter. And this pamphlet was issued to try and help citizens when they wanted to make a complaint. On page 12 and 13 are some articles about a federal gambling raid in the city, in which some gamblers were arrested at a card game. And the names of the people arrested, of course, were familiar. They had been arrested before for gambling. We kept constant pressure on them, but it didn't seem to do much good. What we would do was go over to talk to George Curvers, who was the head of the intelligence section of the Internal Revenue Service, and he was in charge of issuing gambling stamps to all gamblers in order that they wouldn't be in federal violation and violation of Internal Revenue procedures and laws. We would get a list of these individuals, and from this list we would do surveillances and try and get some evidence on these individuals who apparently were taking bets on sporting events and were gambling themselves and at cards and perhaps running card games. Though they usually just gambled among themselves, I didn't know of, and our moral squad didn't know of, places where would be considered a gambling house where games were held on a regular basis, a certain day and time, or every week or every month or whatever. That was how we tried to handle the gambling crimes in the city. And on a whole, I thought that it was reduced to a bare minimum. Thought that the department was doing a pretty fair job on gambling in the city. On page 13 was a small article about the chief joins moral squad on a raid on house. While I was chief, I would come out periodically in the middle of the night in my car and patrol the city, ride around, and go with different operators in various divisions, and like with the Moro squad. And this particular night I was along with the Moro squad when they made three arrests at a house that had complaints against it as being used for prostitution. It was up on McNair Avenue in North Minneapolis, and the arrests were made for prostitution and operating a disorderly house. I felt that coming out in the middle of the night and stopping by various stations and precincts, showing myself and going in on any interesting sounding calls was a good thing to do. It kind of kept the men on their toes, I thought, and they knew I was out there concerned with their problems and trying to do what I can to assist them. I thought it was a good morale booster and helped with the discipline of the department if they knew the chief came out and around once in a while. On page 13 there was a article about my wife Marion and about ribs being a favorite item at the police chief's table. periodically the newspapers would want to come around for some kind of a story, and this was one of them. Marion was an excellent cook, and particularly with meats of various kinds. She got her expertise from her mother, who was also a very excellent cook and could really do meat with the utmost flavor and deliciousness, if there is such a word. But this was an article concerning that. On page 15 and 16, there are some articles about putting police to work at five city schools. This is what became known later as the Police School Liaison Program. And we went to the federal people under the Law Enforcement Assistance Act to